Okay, when we talk about crime and we talk about sentencing, I feel like often the conversation focuses on repeat offenders and public safety. And by the way, coming up at 10:30 this morning, we are going to focus on a couple of cases where it feels to me like a decision has been made that compromises community safety in terms of a release too early of someone who has been convicted of a very serious offense. But I've got a bit of a different angle on justice and the justice system. This is as a result of an article that I saw in the Globe and Mail. What happens when someone commits a crime and then genuinely turns their life around before they're sentenced? Like, if you think about that, you commit the crime, you go to court, but before you're sentenced can sometimes be a long period of time. And in that time, we've got a case here. In fact, it's the subject that was written about in this Globe and Mail article where rehabilitation and personal transformation deserves more attention in our justice system. It's an interesting and nuanced conversation, and it's one that I'm looking forward to having this morning with Lisa Kerr, who is Associate Professor at Queen's University's Faculty of Law. And we have Professor Lisa Kerr joining me by phone. Thank you so much, Lisa, for taking our call today.
Sure thing. Thanks for inviting me.
So talk to me about this situation, why you decided to write this article. This case obviously caught your attention.
It did. So this is a case that has gotten a lot of attention in the Ontario court system. So the facts of the case were a young man, his name is Mr. Burke Whitaker. When he was 20 years old, he committed a serious offense. He took a prohibited firearm to an event. It was actually a funeral. So he was unlawfully possessing this firearm at this funeral. And he's with a group of people. They go outside. They're hanging out in a parking lot, and a car drives by, fires at them. And we don't know who that car was. That was never discovered. But Mr. Burke Whitaker kind of dives behind a dumpster, and he's the danger has passed. But in a sort of reflexive moment, he pulls out this firearm and he fires at the 401, the Toronto main Toronto highway, the 401, and he gets a couple of shots off. And so he's charged with possessing this loaded, prohibited firearm. And of course, he's also fired the weapon. So that's an aggravating factor. Now, this all happens when he's 20 years old. But as you said in your introduction, there's often a lot of delay between the time of an offense and the time we get to sentencing, just because the legal system, it takes time and there's delay and all of that. So by the time he's sentenced, it's 3 years later. And he has been on bail for these 3 years. And during that time, you know, like a lot of young men do between the ages of sort of, you know, 20 and their mid-20s, he kind of figured it out. He pulled his life together. He had a daughter that he was taking care of. He trained to become a firefighter, which is quite a difficult thing. He's working full-time in landscaping. He started a small vending machine business. He's volunteered hundreds of hours in a long-term care home. So the sentencing judge had before him, I think, a really unusual record of post-offense rehabilitation. So the judge is, you know, has this difficult task in front of him. It's a serious offense. The normal sentence range for that kind of offense is around 2 to 5 years. But he's also got a guy who, you know, had pulled his life together. And did it make sense to spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars incarcerating him for several years when all of the goals of incarceration, right, to get someone working, to get someone being law-abiding, to get them taking care of their family, when those goals had sort of already been achieved? So that's what the case is about.
It's fascinating to me. So it went through various levels of court and ended up at the Supreme Court, correct?
That's right. And that alone is significant, right? The court, Supreme Court only hears about 40 or 50 cases a year. So this is obviously an issue that was an important one for the Supreme Court to hear.
So can we talk about why they made, what decision they made, and why they said they made the decision they did?
Yeah, so just to give you a little background, that trial judge who first had Mr. Burke Whitaker in front of him, he decided not to send him to the penitentiary. He imposed what's called a conditional sentence. And a conditional sentence it is technically a term of imprisonment, but the idea is that you're imprisoned in the community. So you're under a sort of strict house arrest, and it can be for up to 2 years. So he imposed that, and he also added 3 years of probation. So he did impose sort of 5 years of state surveillance. And if this guy made a mistake, you know, breached a condition, didn't meet his curfew, any of that, during any of that 5 years, you know, he could face incarceration at that stage. But it was no doubt a very lenient sentence for this kind of offense. And so the judge imposed it, and then the Ontario Court of Appeal, each judge disagreed with one another on various issues in this case. So it was very divided. And then at the Supreme Court of Canada, something quite interesting happened. The case got argued, and normally at that level, you have 9 justices. Normally they need time to reflect on what to do, right? And they might disagree with one another. There might be a dissent. In this particular case, they heard the arguments from both sides, and they deliberated for just 40 minutes. And they came back and unanimously said that they were upholding the conditional sentence of imprisonment. So it's quite remarkable to have them. That's called issuing the decision from the bench. Mm. And it just shows that, you know, that they were very convinced by both the evidence of post-defense rehabilitation in this case. It was very strong. And that they all agreed that where you have that kind of powerful evidence of rehabilitation, I think their view is that trial judges have the discretion to sort of think outside the box and to not impose what would otherwise be the applicable sentence. And I mean, I'll just tell you, these kinds of cases are pretty rare.
I was gonna ask that question next, Lisa. So I appreciate you going there.
Exactly. And I know you have your background as a police officer, and you'd be very familiar that many cases get to the stage of sentencing and you don't have someone who's taking responsibility and who's ready to be working and doing all of those things. Especially if they've been denied bail, they might have been sitting in a remand facility all this time. Pretty hard to show rehabilitation from there. So, and a lot of other guys, they're just not there yet. For whatever reason in their life, they're still sort of not in that place of maturity or accountability. And so these cases are pretty rare. And I think we don't have the reasons from the Supreme Court yet, because they made their decision, but they didn't give us their reasons yet. They need some more time to write that. So we'll see what the court has to say. But I think here that it's sort of a recognition that we want trial judges in this country to be able to respond to unique cases that are in front of them. We don't have a rigid system of sentencing in our country. I know some people wish we did and wish it was more sort of rock solid. You do this offense and you get that punishment. But it's really not the system we have. And I think the Supreme Court dismissing this Crown appeal from the bench is a sign that we do want judges to remain free to respond to these kind of unique but compelling cases of post-defense rehabilitation.
Lisa Kerr is my guest, Associate Professor, Queen's University Faculty of Law. And again, the article, op-ed written into the Globe and Mail, What Should Canada Do with Rehabilitated Offenders? We're going to have this conversation go on for a while after you and I are done chatting, Lisa. But one of the things that I think often happens is people that get frustrated with the criminal justice system, with sentencing, often I think will mistake bail and sentencing, which they're related. There's no question about it, but they also are very different things too.
They are. And so the question of bail is the question of whether you're going to be able to be released pending your trial.
Which, in this case, he clearly proved that he was able to be released, because in that time, it looks like the better part of 4 years, he not only did not commit another offense, but he essentially became a good contributing member of society.
Absolutely. And it's part of why bail is incredibly important, right? The right to reasonable bail is in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and there's a presumption of innocence, right? So the rule in our system is that people are entitled to pretrial release unless the Crown can show that that they're not likely to show up for trial, right? So we're worried they're going to, like, skip town. Or there's a public safety concern, right? There's something about what they're alleged to have done. Their Crown has a particularly strong case where we just say, oh, no, we do have to detain this person before trial. Mr. Burke Whitaker, he did not have a criminal record, this is his only offense. And so in a case like that, you know, he would have applied for bail, and he would have shown the court that he was reliable enough to turn up for court and that he wasn't a public safety risk in the meantime. So that was definitely, I think, an easy decision mm-hmm. that he should have access to bail. And then the second decision that is the issue that went up to the Supreme Court is that at the time of sentencing, once he had his matter was concluded, and now we're looking at the question of punishment, there the judge said, well, given how well you did during your time on bail in the community, the need to punish you with incarceration going forward has really dissipated.
For those of us in Western Canada who probably didn't follow this as closely, it wasn't quite as publicized out here, Lisa, right. as it was there. I know there's a couple of people on the text line saying, well, why is he showing up to a funeral with a gun in the first place? Was there exploration of that through the trial?
Absolutely. And let's be clear here. Nobody involved in this case thinks that that was a good choice. That was a very serious criminal offense. And why was he showing up with a gun at a funeral? I mean, I think the story there is that he was obviously involved in sort of criminal subculture at mm-hmm. that time, right? It kind of speaks for itself, right?
Right.
And so there's no question about his guilt. He pled guilty. And there's no question about the seriousness of the offense. The question is, what is our goal moving forward with him? And I think every Canadian would agree that our goal in the criminal justice system is to turn people into law-abiding people, right? That's our goal. Incarceration is very expensive, right? We don't want people incarcerated. We want them to behave and be good neighbors and good citizens without incarceration,
right?
And so I think there's no question here about the seriousness of the offense. Trial judge was a highly experienced criminal law expert. We all knew. Nobody missed that part.
Sure.
And there was lots of discussion in the case about how, you know, he fired at the 401. That could have hurt or killed an innocent person who was just driving by. The car that had threatened him was long gone by the time that he shot. And self-defense was not in play because the danger for him had passed.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no question there. The question is a forward-looking one, and I think there's a real recognition that while punishment has its place and imprisonment has its place, it can also be sort of risky to incarcerate someone, right? In the case of Mr. Burke Whitaker, it would take him away from housing, away from caring for his children. His employment would be over, and his attempt to pursue his vocational training would be over. He would then be in a highly criminalized environment for several years before being returned to us. And so I think the question the trial judge was asking is, do I want to disrupt his progress in order to, you know, send him to effectively a finishing school for criminals and then have him return to us? Or do I want to sort of keep him on the path he's on, given that our entire goal with sending him to prison is to get him to start behaving the way he is now?
Lisa, you've given us lots to think about. Thanks for writing the article that prompted this discussion today, and we will stay in touch and chat again soon.
Thanks so much. Appreciate the discussion.
That is Lisa Kerr, Associate Professor, Queen's University Faculty of Law. It's an interesting case, especially when you consider, and this is, I think, where, you know, people can get their hackles up about this, because there are way more cases that we hear about people who are released on bail, essentially, and it's some form of an undertaking or recognizance or whatever, but they're released pending a trial and commit another offense or commit another violent offense. And so when people hear this, I think it causes people to, well, you have a feeling, you have an impulse of thought as to whether or not this is the right thing or not. I want to hear your thoughts on this. We are going to go to the phone lines this morning, 1-877-332-8255. We can talk bail. We can talk sentencing. What have we got right? What have we got wrong? We've got a couple of other cases we're following. We've got two more people that will join us here at the bottom of the hour to talk about that, but lots of time to hear from you here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Thanks again to Lisa Kerr for joining us. Lisa talking about, she written an op-ed about Terrell Burke Whitaker. This is the, at the time of the offense, 20-year-old man who took a firearm to a funeral, handgun to a funeral. Outside the event, a vehicle drove by, fired shots. He took cover. The danger had already passed. He fired, pulled out his firearm that he had on his person, shot a couple of shots basically towards the 401 highway. No one was injured. No one was killed. No vehicle was hit. However, he was charged, pled guilty to possessing a loaded firearm. And of course, it came to sentencing. The judge concluded that this offense tends to carry a sentence of 2 to 5 years. And the fact that he shot the weapon actually adds to that. But the mitigating factors in this, while he'd been out on bail for nearly 3 years before sentencing, he started a business. He worked for a landscaping company. He was accepted into the Ontario Fire Academy for full-time firefighting. He'd volunteered well over 100 hours at a care home. He was in a long-term relationship, and he was taking care of his 5-year-old daughter. So the judge, considering all of that, imposes a conditional sentence of 2 years less a day to be served in the community, followed by 3 years of probation. Subsequent appeals to both the Court of Appeal and Supreme Court did not change the decision of the trial judge. Now, this gets into the nuances of, is this an anomaly? Is this far from the norm? We're going to talk more about bail and sentencing and even parole. I've got a couple of current cases in Canada I want to bring to the forefront here in just a second, and then open up the lines for your talk, your thoughts on what needs to change, what do we have right, if anything, or what needs to change with the justice system in your opinion. That on Open Lines coming up in a moment here on 650 CKOM 980 CJME.